Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
This is probably where the drama enters, but I would rather call it sort of an X factor. Because I think we all really react emotionally when we see a certain object on the first glance, before we start to analyze it. And I'm interested as a designer is in this moment. And when I create, you know, I'm also waiting for myself to be so excited about what I'm doing. So when I'm changing the shape, when I'm putting together the materials, the forms, the colors, where do I come to this point of sort of an excitement where I feel that the object has a soul?
Yeah.
It's hard to describe it in any other way. So I'm interested in this moment. And if I don't fall in love with my own object, and it's not so easy to achieve.
Right.
I'm not happy.
Hi, everyone. I'm Jamie.
I'm Amy, and this is Clever. Today, we're talking to product and interior designer Nika Zupanth. Nika designs objects and spaces. That primarily means furniture, lighting, and interiors, but also includes conceptual installations. Her work is theatrical, derived from traditionally feminine forms, but strong with a distinct voice. Elle magazine has described it as punk elegance, and Business Week dubbed it technical chic. She herself says her visual language comes from deep within and is about communicating things which cannot be told.
Nika was born, raised, and studied industrial design in Slovenia. Since then, she's been an exciting figure on the scene, designing for brands such as Mui, Dior, Say, and Moroso, while continuing to add pieces to her own Nika Zupanth's collection. So let's find out more from Nika.
My name is Nika Zupanth. I'm a product and interior designer. I live in Ljubljana in Slovenia. And I think I do product and interior design because it's the profession that somehow has the strongest voice for me, of course, to tell the story that I want to tell through my works.
Mm. There's a very poetic answer. I like that. Can you tell us about your childhood and the hometown that you grew up in and what your family was like and kind of paint that picture for us?
Yeah, of course. So I was born in Ljubljana, which was a time part of ex-Yugoslavia. And I had a very, let's say, normal, ordinary childhood, very happy, I could say. My parents are from science and business, so I didn't grow up with design in particular. But I could say that I was very sensitive as a child to my surroundings. I had a very big imagination. I liked to read a lot. I was like a book eater. And I remember that I, you know, always had this very strong bondage with furniture, whether I liked it or not. So the childhood that I remember, it was really smooth without any, let's say, special surroundings or circumstances around it.
You say your parents were involved in science and business. Were they entrepreneurial or were they working in secure professions?
But they were working in secure professions, but completely far away from the design. But, you know, I had this strong connection with art and design as soon as I entered the puberty. Like when I was 13, 14, I started to be very interested in, besides the literature, in photography, in movies, in cinema, in art in general. And this is, you know, maybe the time when I somehow realized that I really like product design, but I don't know why. You know, it was really, it came somehow from inside of me, because it wasn't something that I would, you know, meet every day. Mm-hmm. And of course, then I went to high school. And after the high school, I decided to study industrial design at the Academy of Fine Arts here in Ljubljana, Department of Industrial Design. And this is how it somehow started.
So you felt yourself gravitationally pulled towards furniture from a young age, but did you understand what that meant? Or like, did you have an opportunity to take things apart and put them together? Or were you mostly exploring your creativity through film and photography?
I think I was fascinated by how strong emotional impact furniture had on me. Mm-hmm. Because I grew up in a very modernist oriented society. So, you know, there were a lot of multiples, this is the furniture that I really remember from school. So really modernist furniture, the furniture that was meant for mass production. And by that, it also had these failures, or it wasn't always done well, or yeah, you could see, you know, small mistakes. So it was a bit of, you could say, depressive, but in an interesting way. And I felt that very strongly. And then maybe, like, on the contrary, when we went to, I don't know, maybe to go to some castle and see old furniture. So I felt this difference. And I always reacted very strongly, whether it was history furniture or this modernist furniture and modernist dogma, which was really strongly present also in Yugoslavia at that time. So this was a strong pull toward furniture, or how a certain environment in which you live have an impact on your daily life, so how you feel. So it's really, I think, objects around you create or underline your emotions, and this was something very, very interesting for me.
Yeah, absolutely. Environment has such a strong impact on who you become, but also your aesthetic and how you see the world and the differences between all the things that surround you. How did you discover the design program at school, and was it difficult for you to find the right program?
I had an option already after primary school to attend sort of high school for design, but my mother, she didn't allow it, because she said I need to go to the real high school in order to get the real education. And today I'm thankful for that, because, you know, this is where I got in touch with literature, with philosophy, psychology, mm-hmm, things that I'm still now very interested in. But I was already, you know, during this high school, I was sure that I will go to the Academy of Fine Arts. There was in Ljubljana to study product design. There was a certain time when I was thinking whether to go to study in London. And I actually applied to Royal College of Art, mm-hmm, but I didn't pass the exams. So the only option that was left and that I feel I need to follow was the Academy of Fine Arts, which also had a very tough exams. And it was kind of a very natural first choice. And whenever I look back, I think this, the path of design on which I was walking, was more or less very smooth or very determined. So I didn't take many turns. I knew very early what I wanted to do. And also when I finished the studies, I somehow realized that I need to have my first exhibition in Milan, that there is no need to have an exhibition in Ljubljana, because it's too small and I wouldn't get, you know, the real response. And, you know, maybe some of my friends were looking at me and saying, no, you need to, you know, do a small exhibition in your own city and then you slightly graduate. But I didn't have this feeling. I knew I need to show my work to professional audience. So sometimes it's like, I mean, this sounds a bit pathetic, but as it was meant to be. So I was just following a certain passion inside of me, and it kind of led me the right way.
Yeah, I mean, that's a big dream to show your work at the Milan Furniture Fair. I mean, it's the biggest international design fair in the world where everybody's eyes are on all of the modern designs there. So I think that's a big dream, but it's fantastic because you kind of just knew what you wanted and you were just shooting for that particular path.
And also, you know, Slovenia has this very special geographic location because Milano, for me, it's only 4-hour drive away with the car. So, because it's on the border with Italy, with Austria, and then with Croatia, it has these geographical influences from really different cultures. And I think it's really interesting. And for example, Italy, for me, it's like an extension of my own country. So for me, in a way, it was very easy to work in Italy, because also in a practical sense, it's kind of easy to bring the prototypes or the products or to put up an exhibition. It's not like you need to really organize a special transport with a boat or with a plane. And this was also very helpful. And sometimes I'm surprised that my other colleagues, let's say from Slovenia, don't feel the same, because in a way for us it's really easy, because Milan is still, it will always be, or at least for a few years more, the strongest point where you present new design. Everybody comes to Milan in April, and you know, it's really easy to sit in a car and take your prototypes there to simplify.
I wonder if it could also possibly be like a confidence issue, because sometimes people are hesitant to show their work or are maybe afraid of the criticism they would get, or afraid that they wouldn't get accepted, or that their work wouldn't be liked. But it sounds like you were pretty confident as a designer.
Yeah, maybe, of course, you could say it's a confidence. From my point of view, it's more of a passion. It's, you know, something that is so strong inside of you. You have this story you want to tell through the design, so you just do it. You don't really have any other option.
So after school, did you go write and show work at the furniture fair, or did you start your own studio and then create a collection and then go? How did that come about?
Well, after my graduation, of course, I tried to work with some companies in my hometown. I was trying different things, maybe for like 2 or 3 years. And somehow my ideas, which were, of course, always very creative, didn't go through. And this is maybe also the time when I realized that I need a bigger audience. And once I decided that I need to speak to this bigger audience, I started to develop my own collections, which were very limited edition pieces. And when you do that, you also need to be very organized in a way. So I always say design, it looks like a very creative profession, but on the other hand, it's really very technical. In a way, you need to be able to manage very well the production of the design and, let's say, the organization of an exhibition. So I worked on all that, but I would say out of passion.
So I'm curious, you've been in the business now for how long would you say you've been a professional designer?
I somehow count from my first exhibition, which was in London in 2006. So it's like it will be the 12th year this year.
Okay. So can you kind of help punctuate the timeline for us? In the 12 years that you've been a designer, obviously you start off as an emerging designer, a new voice, then you establish yourself, and now you're kind of a big deal. Can you talk to us about some of the pivotal moments in your career so far, some of the biggest triumphs, and maybe also some of the trickiest challenges?
I think, you know, in a way, each year it was like a snowball. So each year, each Milan, something happened that was quite of a big importance and that kept me going or give me another push to not go away or not to stop. So maybe for sure the biggest breakthrough came quite early in 2007 or 2008 when Marcel Wanders from MOI discovered my work. This was a big coincidence. And after that, he commissioned Lolita Lamp. So in 2008, I had a launch of this Lolita Lamp, which is still one of the most iconic products also for MOI. And this, of course, was sort of a big light on my work, because it out of, you know, bigger number of young designers into this selection of Marcel Wanders, because MOI at that time was really established company known for always showcasing bold products, but also new talents. So this was maybe the most, let's say, important breakthrough. At the same time, I also made a chair for Moroso, which didn't, it wasn't such a loud, let's say, product, but still it was quite important to have in 2008 at Salone del Mobile and the Design Week in Milan, two products with such a big companies like Moi and Moroso.
Yeah.
But somehow this wasn't enough. You know, you think as a young designer, okay, I'm here now, I made it. But it's not like that. In a way, okay, it's a very good start, but you still need to work. And after that, I remember I had a quite big exhibition at Super Studio Pew. I made my own house, in a way, which was also just published in a book by Fido about architecture in black. I was really happy about that. So I needed to show, still keep showing my own, let's say, force, you know, my own designs, my own products. Anyhow, after that, you know, other very nice clients came. I also started to work with Rosanna Orlandi Gallery.
Mm-hmm.
This was in 2012-11. We started to work together, and it's another part. It's about limited editions. It's completely different than doing a mass product. But I think through limited editions, you are also telling your philosophy and your approach to the design. This for sure was very important.
Yeah, it seems like with limited editions, you have a little bit more range to really express your DNA, your design voice. Whereas with the mass products, it's still very much you, but it's also tailored for mass consumption. So whatever that means, the product has to fit that bill.
Yes.
Did you struggle at all with those first few products for Moroso and Moi? Was it new to work with big companies who have big expectations, or did you just fall right in line and skate through it?
I think I just followed right through line. I mean, you always, you know, you are always challenged, even now, whenever there are obstacles with each product. But for me, it's just the beauty of this path on which you are working. No, and I also realized how good studies I had. I had a very good mentor, Sasha Michtik. One of his objects is also part of Museum of Modern Art, a permanent collection in New York. He was really good, and he really taught me the basics of industrial design. So I just followed his principles while executing those first, let's say, products. And, you know, they were in this very same line. So it was quite, again, smooth way of working with these companies. And then, of course, just to add more, it's really a fabulous company, because if they believe in one idea, then, you know, the whole company tries to make it as it should be.
Yeah. I'm glad you had such a smooth experience. And it does highlight the importance of mentorship.
Yes, for sure.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, Clever listeners. We're getting excited for New York Design Week in May. This year will be better than ever. ICFF, North America's leading platform for contemporary design, will take place from May 19th to the 21st at the Javits Center in New York City. I'll be there, and I'm excited to let you know how Clever is collaborating with ICFF for Launchpad at Wanted, formerly known as Wanted Design Manhattan, and the Emerging Designer Showcase. Launchpad is an international platform for emerging designers that introduces new concepts and showcases prototypes of furniture, home accessories, and lighting. It is the best place for manufacturers to meet new designers, discover fresh ideas, and potential products to develop. The best of Launchpad winners will be selected by a jury of renowned industry professionals, led by yours truly. And they will go on to be featured in another edition of the popular Emerging Designers Showcase. I'll be leading the Emerging Designers Showcase live on the Talks main stage, where the five Launchpad finalists will have a chance to present their projects to our esteemed panel of professionals. It's always a really good time. So mark your calendars for Sunday, May 19th at 4 p.m. Both Launchpad and the Emerging Designer Showcase are presented with media partners Clever, that's us, and Design Milk, and with support from American Standard and Lumens. Visit ICFF.com to learn more and register to attend. Those are the letters ICFF.com. Come by and say hi. I would love to see you there. Support for Clever comes from Wix Studio. Instead of reading you another, let's be honest, boring ad script, Wix Studio just sent me this wild-looking Alice in Wonderland-themed website to scroll through and tell you about. So, whoa. This is not the web I'm used to. There's something called mouse parallax, which makes it feel like you can go deeper into the screen. And as I scroll down, it's like I'm falling down the rabbit hole. And things are moving in depth and perspective. Even my cursor has morphed into a glowing little orb. There are all these no-code animations that make this place feel organic and alive. And Alice is wearing some pretty cool shoes, by the way. Okay, I know I'm mixing up my narratives now, but we are definitely not in Kansas anymore. Your turn to go down the rabbit hole. Build your next web project on Wix Studio, the platform for agencies and enterprises.
So moving on to your creative process, your particular design voice is known for embodying poetry and theater and a certain sort of, I want to say, yeah, flair for drama without being some of the words that drama can evoke that are less pleasant, like whimsical, which nobody likes. Not to be all judgy, but no, it does evoke poetry and theater. And so I want to know, where does this come from within you? Does it go back to your interest in theater and film and photography? Are you creating a scene for people to inhabit?
Yeah, it's quite hard in a way to answer, because as it might, it doesn't look maybe on a first sight, but I'm really very interested when I start to design in function, in innovative use of materials. I'm challenged by mass production because you need to be creative in a very small box. You have so many restrictions, but when you are able to be creative inside of these restrictions, I think something really exciting happens. So I somehow believe that, you know, this dogma form follows function still holds true. Of course, it is not enough, and this is probably where the drama enters, but I would rather call it sort of an X factor, because I think we all really react emotionally when we see a certain object on the first glance, before we start to analyze it. And I'm interested as a designer is in this moment, and when I create, you know, I'm also waiting for myself to be so excited about what I'm doing. So when I'm changing the shape, when I'm putting together the materials, the forms, the colors, where do I come to this point of sort of an excitement where I feel that the object has a soul?
Yeah.
It's hard to describe it in any other way. So I'm interested in this moment. And if I don't fall in love with my own object, and it's not so easy to do or to achieve, I'm not happy. And probably this is where I, you know, add maybe iconic elements. I always say that I like to work with iconic elements, which we all know, but I try to present them maybe in a new way then in the end has sort of a dramatic effect.
You know, I pick that up from your work. There is a familiarity that comes from those iconic elements, but then there's a refreshing new, I don't know, unexpectedness from the way that you incorporate them or use them in your own language that does feel like it resonates with something sort of, I mean, not to sound hokey, but from a past life or from some sort of vague memory. And yet it pulls you toward the object and toward the future, which I think is so exciting. And it is intangible and hard to put your finger on and hard to describe. But I know that moment that you're talking about when you're working through problems with form and material and color. And when you start to fall in love with your own piece, when you start to really feel like it's so exciting, you can't wait for the world to see it. I think that's the moment of conception. That's when you really are birthing this wonderful new object to the world. And if you don't ever have that feeling, then
it's not okay.
Yeah, it's not.
You need to kill your baby. I mean, you need to throw your idea away. So, yeah.
I'm really interested to hear more about these installations that you do, because I mean, I'm a big fan of your furniture, but I do feel like these installations that you create they really transport you and it feels theatrical, but not in a way like that Amy was saying, like it's not dramatic in the sense of, you know, drama for being dramatic, but it's very elegant, but very transportive. Is that even a word?
Transcendent.
Thank you. That's kind of like that. So I'm interested to know like where these ideas come from and how they, do they germinate as like a seed of an idea, or do you find inspiration from a specific point? I mean, Amy talked a little bit before about art and theater and photography, but is there something that you do or start with that creates these incredible concepts?
When we showcased the limited edition collections, or it was the case with Miss Dior installation, where I was invited by Dior to somehow illustrate the character of Miss Dior through my own poetics. I think it's always the theme, you know. I start from this theme, but this theme is something probably that also, you know, bothers, it's not the right way. It's something that I'm interested in a certain moment of my life, and I want to explore it. And I'm really interested in this emotional effect, and I also try to translate my own emotions into objects or these installations. So I try to create a certain feeling, and I think you can do that very strongly when you are using furniture. You quite quickly come to interior design if you follow this path. But it's hard to say because it's always different. It depends. As I said, with Dior, it was an input from Dior to show how I see Miss Dior as a character, and I wanted to give a completely new dimension to Miss Dior. So I referenced Virginia Woolf, A Room of One's Own. So I wanted to make a feminist statement, somehow showcasing this maybe very classical character in a new way. Or if we speak about self-discipline collection and homework collection and the installation around that at Rossano Orlandi, but completely privately in the back of these ideas, I was asking, for example, myself why so many creative women in history failed or didn't lead a very happy life or, you know, ended up sadly. What was, you know, in comparison to their male, let's say, I don't know.
Counterparts.
Yes. And let's say I was asking myself, was it the self-discipline? Is it where we, you know, get too emotional and we lack this feeling of self-discipline? And this question was the starting point to illustrate that through installation.
Do you find a thrill when you get to extend the ambiance and the emotional poetry beyond the furniture and into the whole atmosphere?
Yes, for sure. I think it's the essence of our work. And of course, we are doing this by we, I mean, designers or interior designers or architects. You are doing this to create this environment for other people to experience mm-hmm. or enjoy.
Mm-hmm.
You are offering sort of a stage for their real life to you know, be lived there. If you're doing a restaurant, you are doing a special environment for this restaurant, and you know that somebody will choose this restaurant, I don't know, for his birthday party or just for a coffee. So you are offering a sort of story stage in which people can enter.
I love that. I also really love the femininity in your work, but it's not overly feminine where it, like, men couldn't relate to it. I mean, but it's very beautiful and elegant and well stated. I mean, the cherries and the bows and things like that, but they're done in a way that's just, I don't know. It's really beautiful and understated and elegant.
Yeah, this is, let's say, maybe a quite interesting topic in my work, which I think it's many times also misunderstood, because I'm also sort of a, let's say, very kind of a warrior.
I was gonna say there's a boldness about it, there's an unapologeticness about it that isn't militant or in your face. It's more like a quiet confidence, but also a fierceness that, like, just is emanating from the very DNA.
Yeah, and it's sensual, but it's not overly, it's not in your face.
Yes, but this was, you know, really, this was maybe my driving force also from the beginning, because design anyhow still is boys club. And elements like laces and ribbons and also pink color, 10 years ago when I started, it was, you know, outrageous to use pink color. These are sort of elements that have a certain taboo about them, or they had it. And I felt that I need to pull them out of this ghetto and give them another meaning. And when we did Lolita Lamp in 2008 with Moi, we presented it in pink color. And this was at that time, and today pink is kind of a millennial pink, the biggest trend. But at that time, it was kind of outrageous to use this color. And we even had a subtitle, Who is Afraid of Pink? So this was the, let's say, the daring gesture, the provocative gesture. So I have to say that when I use these things, I use them as a sort of rebellion. Also the bow chair. I mean, I didn't do that because I thought the bow is so cute. I did it because I think it was courageous to work with such an element, to take a bow, to have this courage to do a chair in the shape of the bow. And of course, to do it in a way that it doesn't, it's not in your face. It doesn't, as you said it before, it has this elegance which you cannot deny.
Yes, historically, the use of pink or overtly feminine thing has been relegated to either childlike princessy details or soft, flowing, sensitive details that don't have a certain toughness or don't indicate the strength of the feminine spirit. But that's what I really love about your work, is it's unafraid to be feminine, but it's also conveying this strength and sensitivity. Those two go hand in hand, I think. And it's not even in danger of, you're right, it's rebellious. It's not even in danger of falling into a princess category or something that's childlike. It's very, very grown up.
It's really hard to do. It's hard to do too. Like, how do you find that balance between not being too frilly and too girly, but also being strong?
Yeah, it's like walking on the edge slightly, because you in a way know that you're not doing a big favor to yourself. But then again, you cannot, you know, stop it, because it's so thrilling just because of that, because it's edgy. And I think it's really dangerous to speak about femininity or gender-oriented designs. I don't think there should be gender-oriented designs. I think they just speak with different language to different people, but these people can be, you know, of whatever gender or age, or, you know, it's more of a sensibility.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's not for a particular type of person. It is a type of object with its own, appeal.
So I'm really interested to learn a little bit more about you. We talked a little bit about your childhood, but I'm wondering also outside of work, how do you feed your soul? How do you feed your creativity? Are you a chef? Are you a runner? What do you like to do?
Oh, I always say that I have a double life, you know?
We all do.
Yeah, because I'm very creative. I love design, but then on the other hand, I'm really into sports and nature. As much as I'm passionately into the design, with this same passion, I'm into the sports that I do and also into the nature, which I need for my creativity. So this is why I didn't move from Ljubljana, because I really like the connection of our city, the direct connection with wild nature. I like, you know, I sit in a car and in 20 minutes I can be in really wild, high mountains or at the seaside. And this is really important for me. But on a daily basis, I work out every day. I train karate. I just started this year with Kyokushin karate, which I think is a really great example of life. You don't just learn to fight. I think you learn to live. And I also go to the gym. And in the summer, and also, you know, in warmer months of spring and autumn, I windsurf.
Oh, cool.
I'm also designing windsurf boards this year that will be presented at Rosana Orlandi.
Oh, wow.
Cool.
Yeah, so these are, let's say, two big passions that I have.
Oh, yeah. You would like living in Southern California, I think.
Yes, yes. I need to go to Hawaii.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah. And, sure. But, you know, I think I get really, let's say, energetically cleaned up by doing these things. And being that way, I think I'm more open and more creative. So I'm never inspired now by, or rarely, let's say, with other artwork. I admire it and I like it, but it's not my source of inspiration. My source of inspiration really is the nature, the most ordinary details. So things that I somehow encounter in these very strange places, which has nothing to do with design or with art. Not always, but, you know, many times.
On a practical level, what percentage of your life would you say gets filled up with nature and workout activity?
I mean, I work out every day. So I make sort of a, you know, I work for, let's say, 7 hours in a very creative way. So no distractions if possible. And then I do my training. Let's say today I had karate for an hour and a half. And then I come back and I work again. And during the weekends, I don't work, but I always go to the nature. So at least 2 times per week, I need to be either in the mountains or walking near the sea.
That sounds like a very healthy balance.
I mean, it's hard to keep, you know. I'm thankful that I'm able to do it, because I think it's luxury to somehow take this time and claim it. But on the other hand, I know how essential it is for my work. I think as a creative person, you cannot, you know, overwork yourself. You always need to have this good energy. And I think it somehow reflects on what you do. Maybe it sounds a bit crazy, but I really believe it. I think the products show your state of mind in the end, your energy.
I agree with you. I like the energetic cleanup. I think that is really important.
Yeah.
Speaking of that, is there a problem in your life or in the world that eats away at you? Is there any sort of struggle?
I mean, of course, I follow, you know, what's going on. But I try to, at this point in my life, I somehow try to distance myself, or I speak through the design if there are certain topics or themes that I feel need to be addressed. So I always try not letting problems eating me away, if I understood your question.
Yeah, I mean, and it sounds, you've made it so simple. Just don't let things eat away at you. I think the energetic cleanup is part of that.
Probably. Hopefully.
But it also sounds like you're comfortable finding an outlet for things. Like if it needs to speak through the design, or if you just need to channel it out through a good sweat, or through something even more soulful like the martial arts.
Yes.
Yeah, I think that's beautiful. So let's imagine yourself in the future. You seem to be on a very fruitful and positive trajectory 40 years from now, how do you imagine yourself personally and the studio?
I didn't prepare the answer to that question.
That's okay. What's the first thing that comes to mind? If you close your eyes and think of yourself 40 years older.
I still feel I'm very much at the beginning of my career and that there are much bigger things that I want to do that I did right now. So that there are strong stories that I want to tell and explore. And I really like this feeling, which on the other hand, it's not knowing what comes next or what awaits for me under the next corner. So I'm interested in these very big games, also for the sake of the game itself. So I want to know how far I can go. On the other hand, I really see myself living in nature at the seaside. So finding this peace inside me. It's, you know, I spend every summer, I spend 2 months in Dalmatian Island where we have a house, and I really feel peaceful and of course very creative there. And I think this is such a beauty to be able to be content in a small village on a small island. It sounds a bit romantic, but then again, it's something that I'm really interested in. So, you know, two completely different concepts, but I would be happy with both of them or maybe sort of a combination. But I see myself very active in 40 years.
Well, you are a beautiful example of embracing the unknown and being excited about it and also trusting that there is peace in that process and contentment instead of just, you know, anxiety, which so many of us worry about.
No, I think these are dangerous causes. No, really, I think it's your choice whether you go with this anxiety, with this, you know, demands from outside, demands from the society. I really try to avoid them and try to do my own work and walk on my own path. But I think the martial arts, they help. Otherwise, I couldn't maybe put myself together in such a good way.
Speaking of the future, do you have a new project that you would like our listeners to know about?
We have actually several new projects because Milan Design Week is approaching in April, and this is the most important period for designers around the world, and we will be launching several new collections and collaborations. We are also doing a very beautiful interior residential, a collection of frames, glasses, which is completely new topic. It's cool. A bit early to speak about the companies and everything because we always announce everything during April. But there are some exciting projects in the pipeline.
Ooh, can't wait.
Yeah.
Well, we would love our listeners to be able to follow along and learn more about those new projects that you have. So what are your social media handles or your website? Where can they keep tabs on what you're doing?
I like Instagram quite very much. They can all find me. It's just Nika Zupans. I think Instagram is really a beautiful tool to somehow express what you are doing, what's your philosophy, and to connect with people around the world so easily. So this is, let's say, my home media. Then, of course, I also have Facebook, also just Nika Zupans.
And your website URL?
And website, again, just nikazupans.com. Always my name.
Perfect.
Very simple.
Well, thank you so much. This has been an absolute enlightening conversation and also delightful.
Thank you. It was a pleasure for me too, as well. So thank you very much for inviting me to be your guest.
Our pleasure.
Okay, bye.
That is an impressive woman.
Yes.
Oh wow. My goodness. She is so... When people say self-possessed, that means like a sort of confidence of self, right? That means not only is she poised, but she understands herself so well, and she's not tap dancing for anybody's approval. She's doing her thing confidently, knowing that some people are going to be challenged by things that are pink or overtly feminine, but connected to the deeper importance of expressing herself that way. And so therefore her designs really do exude a confidence that is bold, sexy, timeless, courageous. I mean, all that shit. It's awesome.
I know. She's so cool. I've been such a fan of her work for so long. It was such a pleasure to talk to her and hear more about her background. It's so hard to do what she does, and she does it so well. Like, creating these feminine objects that are not overtly feminine in a way that's so elegant and tasteful. Like, when... if I were to tell you, like, oh, I saw this lamp and it looked like two cherries hanging from the ceiling, you'd be like, what? And then, like, the images in your head might be, like, running through, like, some tacky stuff, right? But, like, when you see it, you're like, oh, yeah. Like, that's you either not tacky. Think, it's incredible.
Yeah, you either think little girl or you think sort of hipster kitsch or something right. sort of, yeah, ironic. And it's none of those things Mm-mm. at all. And I can't stress it. There's this interesting dichotomy in the United States, particularly if something is considered feminine. Manufacturers, brands, stores, people are gonna automatically assume that men won't want it. And they're mostly right. But this work, the work of Nika Zupans, is not in that category. It's not the kind of thing that men don't want to be associated with because it's girly.
Yeah.
It is the kind of thing that is so bold and intriguing that men aren't off-put
no,
by it.
No, it's sensual, you know? It's elegant, it's well done. It doesn't push, it's not overly girly. It's very artistic and, did I say sculptural? It just feels...
yeah. No, and sculptural, yeah, you're right. But it's also not polarizing.
No.
It's not polarizing. In fact, it's warm and approachable and embracing of all people. That's why I really liked the way she described it when she talked about it having its own expression. It is not designed for a particular subset of the market.
Yeah.
It is like an individual on the spectrum of gender, you know, and it can have its own fluidity and its own identifiers and just be where it wants to be, and you can engage with it as such.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Plus, now I'm going to have to sign up for martial arts classes. Right? Don't you? I'm convinced that's what I need to do to be my full badass.
I know. I feel like that's I loved that she does that. I think that's awesome. I love it because it's disciplined. And it gets all the stress out. It gets all the anger or frustration out that you need to kind of get out so that you can make the room in your brain to be creative and do all the things she has to do with her brain.
Yes. And it's also a connection to a rich culture and a deeply methodical process and a philosophy.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just a pure, like, sweat it out type of thing. There's something really meaningful about it. And it sounds like that poetry is something that she really responds to too.
Yeah. I don't know a whole lot about martial arts. My husband did it when he was younger, and my daughter took an 8-week class at school for Taekwondo. And the first thing they teach you is it's about discipline and self-confidence. It's basically confidence. That's what it's all about. And I thought that was great. And so I can see that with her, like, that she would enjoy something that helps keep her confidence up.
I wonder how many of our listeners have a martial arts background or take martial arts classes. I wonder if that's something... I mean, I just wonder how many creatives could really benefit from that form of activity.
Yeah, I don't know. I think I would absolutely hate it. But I feel like on the flip side, like, afterwards, I'd be like really grateful that I did it.
Right. Like, you'd have to drag yourself there, but you'd
totally
never be bummed that you did it.
Yes. Yes.
I just worry that I might, like, wear that outfit all the time. It looks really comfortable.
It's basically just a robe in two pieces.
I think they teach you not to, like, wear it in
in inappropriate situations.
No, like, I don't think
I can sit on the couch and eat pizza wearing that outfit, but I think I might want to.
Thanks for listening. Please subscribe to Clever on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts, and go to cleverpodcast.com to sign up for our newsletter, read the show notes, and see images of Nika's work.
Connect with us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at Clever Podcast, because we totally love hearing from you. This episode of Clever was edited by Ty Navarez and Alex Perez, with music by L1011.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.